You are listening to episode 128 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Tweeting Selfies While Driving.
Episode 128 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 9th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my North by Northwest brother, James Furlough. Whoa, you're totally on silent. I can't hear you.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The reason why I was on silent is because it's also Girl Scout cookie season.
Oh, baby.
I got here in my hot little hands a Thin Mint. And then soon to be devoured is a tagalong.
What's a tagalong?
Chocolate peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
I stick all of my Girl Scout cookies in the freezer, by the way.
Yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, they're so good. Frozen.
Oh. I believe in oppressing young girls trying to get ahead, so I don't buy Girl Scout cookies.
Mm.
Okay. I actually, or at least that's how I feel every time I tell them, I'm sorry, not today. I actually do it for health reasons, but I feel awful, which is one of the reasons why it's so brilliant what they do. I actually considered buying cookies today and, like, giving them to somebody. This is just stupid. That's a really bad idea.
You know, they got to learn how to deal with rejection early in life. What you're helping them with.
Exactly. I'm here to, you know, you got to learn in business, you got to learn how to take no's. Because,
yep.
You know, a million
yep.
no's before you get the first yes. You know what I mean?
Totally. So. It is also March. Therefore, I am donating a glorious mustache that by the end of this month will be amazing. Which is nice. And then, because spring is upon us, I have upgraded the RAM on my rig from a massive 4 gigabytes of RAM, which is not at all massive, to 12.
Woo! Matt, wait. How did you do 12?
I added 2 4-gig sticks to my existing 4-gig sticks.
Because
it starts out with it has 4 drives. And it had 2 2-gig sticks in
drives. I didn't know you could go up to 32 gigs in a iMac.
I could actually go a little higher than that. But
you can go to 64?
I think I could do – I don't remember. OWC, Other World Computing. That's where I buy my extra RAM at. It's Mac Daily News recommends, and they're fairly priced and – seems to work fine.
Yeah, my mini is maxed out at 16 gigabytes, which right now my little RAM keeper is telling me I have 10 free.
mine I'm at 7.76, which is nice because in the middle of the podcast when I'd have the different feeds go in and the video, it would be like, oh, you're at 13 megabytes.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I constantly ran the thing down to zero, and which is why I was like, I guess it's time. So.
Mine only struggles when I'm like running, like when I'm surfing Reddit while playing SimCity. It does have on 227-inch monitors. It's like, okay, you know what? We either need more RAM or more graphics card. Let's get our act together.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So my computer, I got it. I was doing the math, and I got it middle of 09. So it's in terms of computer age, it's actually getting up there.
Yeah.
So it was time. Get a little midlife kicker.
I'm all ready to upgrade to a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
But you kind of glossed over my – have you been paying attention to something?
Well, I did say it, but I was on mute, and and I explained why I was on mute. Our every once in a while co-host guest David Perry is there right now.
What?
Oh. Somehow – I don't get this. Somehow he has convinced his bosses that his greeting card product is relevant to South by Southwest. I don't get it. Now he has talked to his boss, and this one makes sense. It's into they actually have a convention for paper, different types of paper and stuff. I go, I get that. It's in New York, and I think he went last year and he brought his wife along, which I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. That's what I would do. But somehow – Somehow he's convinced his boss that South by Southwest is relevant. And he even went to Consumer Electronics Expo a couple years ago.
I knew he went to CES. But yeah, South by Southwest is an incredulous stretch, man.
It's actually like anti-paper on.
Right, I know.
Oh yeah, no, he is a brilliant negotiator. I will not take that away from him. I am not that. He has mastered the art of. He'll ask and ask and ask until you finally say yes. He goes, "All right, cool."
Yeah, man, you know, Skiku Wheel gets the grease. My boss has conceded if I pay for entrance, hotel, and travel, basically I do it myself, he'll give me the time off for CES. That's, you know, we are...
Are you saying paid time off? Is that what you're saying? Or
I believe so, yeah.
I won't yell at you for taking the
I'll give you the vacation.
I mean, there's a difference there, right? I'm not going to pay you, but yeah. You can go. That's fun.
I just got to do it myself. I can't. He's
You're not
gonna,
as good of a negotiator.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, he sits there and he goes, it's relevant enough. He's been before for the sake of the company, but it's just not, you know, whatever. Stupid. Ugh. I need to work for a ridiculous company like yours and pedal paper printing.
Ridiculously awesome company.
I'm saying it because I'm jealous.
Smashes abound.
But you know what? But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about...
Kind of are.
Abusing it, actually. Touche. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their awful marketing campaigns if you're Samsung, and the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure that he probably should have talked about before we had the opening in retrospect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's okay. I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Past or present. Cool. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we got all sorts of social interaction stuff that we do. You know, see, we could go to South by Southwest and, like, totally fit in. It's, you know, a third of it is all social
media
related, right?
You know what, Matthew? I'll make a deal with you.
Yeah?
All you got to do... is pay for the plane ticket and the hotel and the entrance. I'll even give you the day off.
I appreciate that.
And you can go.
I actually look
for it back on Sunday. You know what? I'm game.
You
could even better yet. You could go live.
I looked into it, and I'm not going to go to South by Southwest for the exact same reason I don't go to TED conferences. And TED conferences are, you know, right in our back door. Like,
that would be amazing.
There's no reason for me to not go to TED conferences. Except for the price of admission. It's damn expensive. It's crazy. It's a couple G's to get in just for
Flying
like
them in.
Basic time. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we're going to give it amazing music. It's going to be like one of the coolest shows out there. We're going to talk to Eddie Snowden. Whatever. I'm not jealous. I just have to become independently wealthy. So, anyways, if you want to follow us throughout the week, we've got all sorts of social stuff. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is at NextWiggin4, NextWiggin4, like Ender's Game Wiggin, similar sort of thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty much James Furlow everywhere, except... on gaming stuff. I have a different gamer tag because for reasons.
for reasons, yes. That's, you know, yes.
They're not even good reasons. I'll admit it.
Cool. you're just leaving it at that? period.com. So if you want to find all this information about us, see your profile, see what makes us cool, you can go to furloughbros.com. But we got way more than that there. We have all the articles we're going to talk about this week are going to be linked there. We've also got links to the show's podcast if you're watching on YouTube. We got links to YouTube if you're listening to the podcast and you want to see our faces in two dimensions. Whoa. Dude, I saw 300 Rise of an Empire this weekend. Stupid movie.
Really?
And it's made all the worse by the fact that it's just cheesy 3D stuff. And we saw it in 2D, which cheesy 3D in 3D is awful. Cheesy 3D in 2D, makes me want to leave the theater.
You know, I have a confession.
What?
I have never actually seen the original.
You know, gratuitous is a word that pops to mind anytime I think of it. And the only thing is that it is like, you've got like one of the coolest warrior epics of all time and like the greatest story of like warrior courage and like the, you know, the 300 at Thermopylae. It's amazing. And you juxtapose that to just the bottom of the barrel when it comes to, you know, over the top violence and sex in a movie, and it kind of balances out into like a pretty average show.
Who directs that again?
It was Schneider, the dude who did Sin City and the stuff. I get Watchmen, that kind of team. They'll there's different people involved, different like, you know, writers and I don't know, the inspiration. But they're, you know,
I saw Watchmen, so if it's anything like that, then I know what I'm not missing out on.
It's like Watchmen turned up a little bit.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty. It's
my favorite scene in Watchmen was where they took the chainsaw to the guy's arms around.
I actually really like Watchmen because it is Time's top 100 works of literature of the last century of 1900.
It's a great book.
The graphic novel is on that list. Yeah, and I mean, and when you read it, it's fantastic. It is. It's just, I mean, like, it is the quintessential superhero work of art. I mean, you know, piece of literature. And, you know, I think it deserves all the credit it gets. And Zack Snyder did a decent job turning it into a movie, you know, being, you know, good to the source material. So, yeah. But, yeah, 300 Rise of an Empire is not based on anything. It was just, you know, a cash cow, and it felt like it. How did I get here? Oh, YouTube. If you're – okay, go to the website. Check out our stuff. It's awesome. Show cuts are there too.
This is podcast.
Yeah, see, oh, you know what? That's the worst part about this, that movie. Honestly, that is the worst part about the 302. Is there are no good lines. There are no good one-liners. There's not, I mean, like, there are lines that to this day we still, you know, this is Sparta, and you tonight we die, you know, like all your like great epic like war cries from that movie. There's none of them. There's like one really like decent.
Do they
line.
Actually fight in the movie?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, just checking. I don't know.
It's they pour in bloodshed, but it's like one of the things about 300 is that it was made for $40 million and it made like a bazillion dollars. I think it's the total amount that it made versus how much it cost. It's like one of the top ROIs.
Best ratios, yeah.
Best ratios of a movie ever, and
ROI is just a ratio, so it's okay. You're good.
Boom. But one of the things is that the graphics of it there are points where it's obvious, where it's like, you know, there's crazy bloodshed everywhere, but it's like just red water being splashed all over the place. Whereas in this movie, it was CGI and it looked awful. It looked bad. You're just like, why didn't you guys just do what you did last time? That worked really well. I mean, like, it didn't look as cheesy. I mean, but they wanted the blood to splatter up into your face in three dimensions, and it just came across as like, y'all are trying too hard. You know, go back to the basics of gratuitous violence. It is not for the kids by any means, that's for sure.
So I'm gonna try this. Speaking of violence, it can get pretty tough out there. It can be hard for companies to survive.
It's
and
true.
To thrive, and sometimes you just gotta pull back. You gotta pull back a little bit, like a certain shack of radios.
Yeah, this one hurts me. This one hurts my heart a little bit, because I am one of the few people that I know, and this is the problem, that is a big fan of Radio Shack.
they lost their identity a few years ago, and it's like they've been searching. The Shack or something, and yeah, they lost their identity.
Yeah, they did. What I like about it is you walk into you know, I live in the Silicon Valley, so I've got, you know, one of the coolest things going for me, which is, if you're in the Midwest, you're even on the East Coast, you're in the middle of, you know, Germany, wherever, and you need to go and look, you need a chips or something, you know, like potato chip, exactly, but like, you know, LEDs or electrical components or whatever you want, man. You're like, trying to find a store that you can go to buy those is basically impossible. You just buy them online. Like, you go somewhere like jameco.com, which is just a great resource, you know, really decent prices. You can buy, you know, one-off stuff. I live next to Jameco. I go to the store.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool. It is really cool. And we've got some of the greatest resources for finding components. But even then, it's like you still have to do a lot of driving to get to these places oftentimes. And they're out of the way, and you have to, like, you know, go through all sorts of whatever. And if I just need a capacitor or a resistor or whatever for what I'm doing – you know, I don't want to go all over the place. Well, I can go to Fry's Electronics, which is a West Coast chain, for those of you who don't know, but it's kind of a Best Buy competitor, but they have an entire aisle dedicated to components, electrical components and building stuff. And they got a huge selection, but, if you don't know of Fry's, it's worth your time to Google Fry's, like, experience, and 'cause it's awful. It's astounding how bad the customer service is, and
well, that's what, like, we've always said between ourselves. You know, is like, if you're doing research, you don't go to Fry's. Mm-mm. If you know exactly what you want and need, or you're just killing time, because that's also fun, I'll admit it. You go to Fry's.
Yeah,
because the prices, they can't be beat, and they have just a ton of stuff. But the people there have no idea. You'll ask them, hey, I'm looking for – I've done this before, where it's like something that you would expect. Oh, I'm looking for a router. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, router. And they – invariably there's, you know, supervisors or managers of each section.
Yeah.
They have to go to that person and be like, where are the routers at?
Oh, jeez.
To which I'm like, I feel like you should know this one.
Well, and then
the worst part is, so that person will know. He'll be like, it's aisle 5. Then they'll go to aisle 5, and they'll be like doing the back and forth thing. I'm like, dude, at this point, I can do this. And then they get there, and they'll start picking up the boxes and reading it, trying to figure out, like, oh, well, this router says that it has whatever. I'm like, okay, thank you. I can read. You don't have to read for me and then tell me what you read. That's
cool. Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's yeah. That's all you're gonna do. It's awful. I mean, and with the electrical components, it's even worse, because it's a billion tiny little components, and you're like, I'm looking for a 10-watt, 76 kilo-ohm resistor, and I need a pack of 5 of them. Like, you can tell them exactly what you need, and it'll take them an hour to find it for you.
Yeah, unless you hit that supervisor. But
right.
Oh, it's crazy.
Even with the supervisor,
but you can build a computer, a very nice computer.
Oh, yeah.
Just out of that store.
Oh, yeah.
They've got everything.
Yeah, they've got, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That being said, if I don't want to drive to Jameco, I don't want to drive to some of your other, like, major depots of components, I don't want to deal with the Fry's experience, I go into Radio Shack. And I go into Radio Shack quite a lot, because they got just, like, little, you know, things for everything I'm doing. And I go in there for all sorts of little do-it-yourself projects. And they're awesome. They're really cool. And I'm totally bummed that they're going to close at least a quarter of the stores that I like. Which means, and I'm like positive, like, the one that's, like, closest to where I live, I go there quite often if I need stuff, because it's like a 5-minute drive, but no one's ever in the store. I'm literally have never gone in the store when anyone else was there, which tells me it's going away. Which is a bummer, because I like it. It's really convenient. But they don't, you know, it's a bad location. It's actually a decent location. It's just hidden in a parking lot. Nobody knows it's there. But the biggest problem Radio Shack has
is location, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's easy to get to. There's a lot of parking. Yeah. It's just, it's a bummer. But like you said, they have a major identity crisis, and they don't know what they do. They made their mark by being a, you know, do it yourself in the do-it-yourself universe, and when everything was radios and vacuum tubes and early transistors, they were amazing and they did gangbusters. And then everything became computers and there was still a need for all those components and different musical setups and stuff, and everything was awesome. And then music started to become embedded processors and computers became more and more embedded, where it's, you know, you'd have a little bit of RAM, a little, you know, a processor, a motherboard, a few discrete components that was kind of like plugging in Legos, but there wasn't a lot of soldering onto boards. And now, you know, everything's cell phones and it's all embedded onto a single piece of silicon, and, you know, it's, there's no need for that. And what's interesting to me is that there's a resurgence of the do-it-yourself, you know, universe, I think, right now. And you know, it might just be my perception, but I think it's, I've read a lot of different places where, like, no, do-it-yourselfing, especially high-tech do-it-yourselfing, is more, you know, prevalent than ever. You know, the birth of the, you know, of the Arduino is huge. And it's like, I just sit there and I go, man, I think there's an opportunity. I'm glad they're not shutting down the entire company. I think there's an opportunity to just kind of get back to the roots of what they used to be about. But who knows what they'll do. They might try to double down on selling you cheap cell phones.
Yeah, that's really weird. I find myself asking, if I were Radio Shack, what would I do? And I like this one line in here. They go, Radio Shack has long been a retailer without a soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about 10 years ago is when they made that switch. And, you know, I don't know about a soul is the right phrase, but, you know, without a purpose. It's kind of like, yeah, who is our perfect customer? Who is it that we want to attract? And it's weird. I find myself like, okay, all right, let's say I was given control of Radio Shack tomorrow. And they were like, fix it, because we don't want to lose $191.4 million next quarter. I don't know. It's fair. You know, what would you do to bring people back in? You know, I think what you were talking about was interesting. You know, get into the Arduino space, the hacker space in a way, which would be interesting.
Get Raspberry Pis in there. Well, it's funny. If I had to come up a mission statement for the new Radio Shack, what I would say would be, I want to be a location that inspires the next generation of do-it-yourselfers, like electrical do-it-yourselfers, and to be a place where, you know, you don't just go there to, you know, pick out, you know, little musical components and stuff, but a place where you can go and find information on what you're trying to do. You know, we've had a conversation on this show before about the nature of Arduino and what are microprocessors, what can you do with them, what's exciting about them. And I feel like this is like the perfect showcase of, these are cool projects you can build, you do demonstration type stuff, and then you lay the components out before everybody. Buy them. This is how you do it, man. This is where, you know, these are the resources that you need. These are the, you know, the programs that you need. These are the books that you need. These are all the components that you need. I mean, you can do that in music. You can do that in, you know, microcontrollers. You can do that in phones. You can do that in, you know, there's just like a whole realm of different things that you can do, you know, and not just selling, you know, not just selling, you know, commodity items, which is what they sell, is
right.
That's their whole point. You know, and you're right now, and I think if you can get to the point where you're showing people, this is how you automate your house. This is how you, you know, install, you know, Nest thermostats.
And what I was thinking. I was like, you could get in the Nest, Lockitron, you know, really tap into some of those. Yeah, home automation would be very interesting space. And I think, like you were saying, don't just sell them. Go the route of the education route. We're going to have videos. We're going to have, you know, I don't know what you would call it, but like packages, essentially, where you say, I want to do X. And they go, okay, cool. You need to buy these 50 parts. Here's the instruction manual. You know, you could do it, and we're here to help.
Right. And I mean, do go the Lego store model route where you've got a couple of displays of amazing models that you can build, a bunch of small displays of cool little things that you can just, that people just build from different components, you know, stuff for people to play with, and make it a place where, you know, make it kid friendly, make it somewhere where kids are going to have fun going in and pressing buttons and, you know, you press this button and something, you know, spins and a light comes on and, you know, have, like, you know, just, I don't know. I feel like there's so much opportunity there. And, you know, part of it is that that's the store that I've always wanted.
What if you were to, like, man, that's interesting. What if you also teamed up with, not necessarily a Lifehacker blog, but, like, you know, like the Hacker blog and some of those other DIY blogs and, you know, and somehow say, Instructables would be very interesting. And sit there and go, like, A, we want to advertise on your sites, which is fine, and you want to do that. But B, we actually want to license some of your content and become – the way I would describe it is like a dynamic hackerspace.
Yeah.
A place where you walk in, if there's no customer, they're reading hacker blogs. They're – you know, that's who you're hiring. You're not hiring regular salespeople. You know, it's like – dude, part of the resume process is like, so, what's the latest thing you've built? You know, and you like you target, you know, engineering college students, that kind of thing to run your store. You know, geeks essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of, I think of it as what was that one store that completely failed but had cool stuff in it?
Not Brookstone, but Sharper Image,
yeah. Kind of like that, but grittier.
Right.
A little, not, you know, yeah.
Well, and when I say this, you've got, they have like 4,500 stores. You've got over 4,000, you know, areas, you know, places to go, right?
Yeah.
And your current model's not working. So pick 500 of your stores and turn them into this. Just see what happens. You know, and you know, pick your biggest places and just see, does this work? Does this make sense? You know, and at this point with Radio Shack, man, they've got this awesome opportunity to, you know, try, you know, obviously, I think what they want to do is they want to distill down to what do they think is going to sell, what's going to work for us, and go forth and prosper. But the thing is, and what's crazy about it is it's like, you know, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but, you know, but I know in the Bay Area, at least, you can travel 20 minutes and hit up 4 different Radio Shacks. Why not, at least in areas where there's a high density of these, you know, storefronts, just try different themes. Like, you know, pick 5 or 6 different themes. This one's all going to be about music. This one's going to stay about cell phones.
I don't think I would do that. I would standardize. I wouldn't. That sounds like a pain to try to manage.
Well,
other than for the experimenting, let's try to find our niche phase, and then once you've got it, make them all consistent. You know, the other thing I was thinking is it would be fun to hold competitions and actually create like innovation prizes and stuff. And going back to like with the blog stuff, you're actually featuring content and, you know, give people a reason to interact with the store, to come into the store. You want it to be so that parents want to take their little kids there so they can play with the stuff and they can dream and actually have it set up where it's like, dude, teach your 5-year-old about automation.
Right.
And, you know, they've got that kind of stuff. Again, it's like it's a dynamic hacker space, essentially. I could see them do that. That I think that would get them closer back to their core root of who they were. And I don't think the market's as big, but I think the customers that they find will spend a lot more.
Right.
You know, and they'll actually be fans and people who come back and people who hang out. You know, it's a Starbucks for geeks. And, you know, maybe that's the analogy you think of.
Have great Wi-Fi in all of your stores.
Yeah, totally should. And I think that could be very interesting. Like I said, I don't think they'll have as many customers, but I think the customers they do have will be loyal fans who spend hundreds of dollars every year instead of the people who go, oh, I need a cheap cell phone.
I don't really know that having that many customers is a big problem for them right now.
Well,
they don't have a lot of customers to lose.
it's not, you know, 3,000 stores. That's very impressive.
I know, yeah.
I'm with you. That's what I think they should do. I'm with you, man. Time to change. You want to be co-CEO? I would do that with you.
Okay, let's do it. Let's buy Rodeo Shack.
All right. We don't want to buy it. They could just appoint us, give us some stock options. That's good. I know how this game works.
Exactly, man. Golden parachute that up.
I'll take it. You know what? Give me some stock, but it's only good if it reaches a certain level. I'll take a percentage of the revenue, you know, whatever, or the profits. So if we're not profitable, none of that. I'm in, man. That would be fun.
Me too. Let's do it.
I have no idea how to transition to this one.
Just do it, dude.
I'm going to do it.
Jump.
I got it. What I love about us is that we're excellent at coming up with ideas and thought-provoking scenarios and saying, yeah, this would be fun to try. I've started following this blogger who is similar deal. What?
So I don't like it.
So Seth Godin, I'm sure is a name that you've heard. Is that fair?
I'm bad with names. Give me.
Oh man.
Where would I know?
He's written a lot of books. He wrote something about tribes. I can't remember the title of it.
Yeah, but, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's mastered the art of writing the short blog post that will blow your mind. It's kind of what he does. It's fun. And it's kind of crazy because it's typically there's no pictures, no links, just a thought of the day.
You know what I love, James? The book is not something about tribes. It's not like there's tribes in the title somewhere. The title is
Tribes.
Tribes.
There you go. Love it. Oh, you know, hey, I was right on.
You were close.
Yeah, I felt it was like Lead Your Tribes or it just says Tribes. All right. So anyways, he wrote what I thought to be a thought-provoking blog post. Oftentimes his stuff is about leadership and innovation, whatever. But he was talking about privacy. And I thought it was an interesting way of thinking about it because I know we hit on privacy issues and it's clearly been in the news a little bit as of late. And his opening line pretty much says it all. You can read that, and you get the entire point of the blog post, which is nice. He says, people don't care about privacy as much as they care about being surprised. And so his point, yeah, he goes, if you think about it, we're willing to give people, like credit card companies, a ton of information. We don't even care. We go to doctors. We go to therapists. We go to these certain places, and we tell them private information. We're used to it. We go online and we share private information back and forth. He's like, that, you know, we do that a lot. Says, but the outrage over privacy leaks and snooping is largely because it comes as a surprise. Hmm. It's not what we signed up for and it's not what we expected. And that's where we get angry. And so he was saying that, you know, honestly, people, they don't, if we know what we're getting into when we get into it, we're totally okay with that. And again, you think like Facebook, people know that everything you do on there is not private, and yet we sign up for it in droves. Right. And his whole thing was like the future of, you know, places is where, I thought this was interesting. He says, the thing about surprising people is that once you do it, you can't do it again and again. And so he says, so as surprise fades, people will come to tolerate and then eventually actually look forward to organizations using the data we used to believe would never be used.
Huh.
Crazy. And I'm kind of like, yeah, exactly, right? That's why I like his blog post, because you always go, huh. Yeah, and actually you'll like this because this will be a good transition here. He goes, here's one scenario to give you a sense of how big this shift will be. When just 1% of all cars have a networked dashboard camera in use, then virtually every car and every driver will be under constant surveillance.
That's true.
When you cut someone off or run a stop sign, the system will know. Good drivers will take advantage of the information that's created to get much better prices on their insurance, which they should. He goes, and that will completely transform the insurance industry and safety of driving. And he goes, we've always been awash with data, but it's never just been collected. And part of it is because of privacy, you know, concerns. But he sits there and says, but that will, you know, as these surprises happen, you go, oh my gosh, they know. It's kind of like you think about the NSA, the huge outrage. And now we're kind of like, yeah, they do it. It's a shame. I don't like it, but it is what it is. Yeah. There may come a time when you're like, man, yeah, they do it. And they're using it for good somehow. And that not only will that happen on the government level, but it happens on a private level. And then he finishes off with, he goes, who cares about privacy? Is it a little like the weather? You can care about it, but it's not clear there's much you can do once surprise goes away and the engines of commerce and power kick in. And so he's like, which is an interesting, like, it's happening. Get over it and just realize it and embrace it. And again, his is geared towards entrepreneurs and leaders and saying, one of the next big areas of innovation is going to be creating apps that take advantage of private information that helps customize things for you.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, just an interesting, you know, thought about, you know, and that kind of revolves around everything that we talk about and privacy and technology, and you're just like, huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
You know, it's funny. I mean, one of the radio shows that I listen to on a regular basis. They talk about the fact that they're kind of stunned at how quickly, you know, how just a few months ago, you know, they were collecting the NSA is collecting our metadata. Revelations like that were, you know, outrageous, and everybody was up in arms, and everybody was talking about it, and you know. And this last, you know, just a week or two ago, it became clear that the NSA regularly turns on people's webcams and watches what you're doing through your webcam secretly. And they have all sorts of different, different videos of, you know, people. Yeah, I saw you waving the NSA. And they have all sorts of videos of, like, you know, quote unquote unintended nudity, you know, and all sorts of stuff. And it's just like, it's not even a, well, they could do this. No, they do it. We know they do it. It's open. Everybody, you know, it's a known secret. They spy on Americans using webcams and all of, you know, and have been for a long time. They have big databases of those videos. And you sit there and you go like, and nobody cares. I mean, it's like middle of the newspaper news. It doesn't even hit the top of the blogs. Like, he's absolutely right. Now we have fully accepted the fact that we are being spied on in horrible, atrocious ways, and nobody cares. I think if I'm going to get really, 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 really cynical for a second, I think the only reason we cared to begin with is because it was kind of a born identity. Snowden had a really hot girlfriend, which is good for the news. And, you know, he's this young dude giving up everything, and he's, you know, going to China. Are you talking? Because I can't hear you.
Oh, I was weird. I don't remember putting it on mute. I said, did he have a good-looking girlfriend?
She was like a...
I didn't follow it enough.
I don't know if she was a stripper or... but she was like an exotic dancer type thing. And like, he's living in Hawaii. He's got this, like, he's getting paid good money. He's got this really cute girlfriend that everybody's, like, you know, was posting pictures of and stuff. And then he goes to China and then to Russia. And it's all the intrigue and spy, you know. There's a part of me that thinks it's the only reason why anybody paid attention at all. Because Snowden wasn't the first leaker. Everybody else had just gone through official channels and been quieted. But at the same time, those weren't exciting stories. This was an exciting story, you know, and so I don't know. I get the feeling that my general sense is, yeah, he's absolutely right. And we don't care. And eventually we're going to love it. And, you know, then, you know, and eventually we'll be abused by somebody and in horrific manner, because that's the nature of, you know, of all of human history. If there is a tool that somebody can abuse, eventually somebody will abuse it. And, you know, hopefully it's not me, but I, you know, what am I supposed to do? I can't fight it. You know, there's nothing. So hopefully the good of it out, you know, and where the usefulness of it outweighs the horrific abuse that, you know, will be exacted upon me through it. So, you know, that's my optimism.
There you go.
But,
you know. So do you think Apple will be collecting data with their latest announcement?
You know, I'll be honest. I know this is just you're using that as a way of a segue to get into CarPlay. But,
That's what I do.
To answer the question, no. I actually think from what I've observed, unless they're just out and out lying, which is entirely possible, they seem to be pretty good about keeping your data, your private data, private. I mean, you know, iMessage
is a secure enclave, okay? Just get over it.
Exactly. But no, this
Samsung doesn't have, just for the record.
Which way?
Samsung doesn't have, just for the record. It's all good.
Craziness. So Apple launched CarPlay this week.
Surprise.
Officially.
Face.
iOS in the car is what it used to be called. It's been rebranded as CarPlay. Did you pay attention to it at all?
I read a little bit, but I had, before I got around to reading about it, I saw you had already posted a bunch of articles, so I backed off a little bit so that you could surprise me.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, the basics of it, it's not, you know, it's, they kind of, you know, they kind of previewed it, so it's not too shocking, but basically looks a lot like iOS, but it's, you know, for your car. They've got a bunch of partners, and one of the big things that they're going for is, like, I guess it's, like, relatively difficult to go in and select, like, a playlist or specific songs from the dash. It's really designed to, like, you can hit up, like, a Spotify, like, pre-made playlist or iHeartRadio or iTunes Radio.
Or you
like,
get Siri a command, right?
Right, right. It's designed where it's really – it's difficult to do a lot on it. It's designed to – there's a specific task like play music or go get this map or whatever, and they've tried to make it really, really, really streamlined so that it's really easy to do that. And the reason why that's an important thing
–
yeah, and because – and this is what's interesting about it. One of the things that I like about this technology or like where Apple's going, and Google's going to take a decidedly different approach to it, and it'll be interesting to see who wins, is – Apple is locking down the system because their big thing is they don't want any of the liability for this coming back to them. They don't want people to, you know, their argument is, you know, they want to keep people safe. They're big into safety because they like their customers being alive, which is a good reason, you know, it's a good business model.
I get that.
But I think the bigger thing here is that, you know, if it becomes a political football, if it becomes a thing with courts, if it becomes a big deal, it could absolutely ruin, you know, that space for them. So they're acting with extreme caution, which is their reason, their argument for why they haven't opened up the third party apps yet. The third party apps that are available are very small. A lot of people, there's a big debate going on right now, whether or not it eventually will get Google Maps or not. A lot of people are saying don't expect it because, you know, they're pushing Apple Maps and they want Apple Maps to be on there. At the same
time,
they
fixed a lot of the issues with it too, so I get that.
Right, and you know, my personal opinion is
search
cool.
Is still horrible, but that's different.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. It's
I do know. You live in a big city. It doesn't count.
That's true. And Apple's back door. They want it to be nice for them. It's hard for me to judge fairly. But
I was looking for – what was I searching for the other day? It was something where I was fairly certain, like, it should have popped up. You know, man, I wish I could remember what it was because you'd hear it and go, man, I feel like they should have nailed that. And they didn't because I knew there were three of them and one of them was nearby and I couldn't remember the exact location of it. And so I was like, all right, you know, Siri, tell me. She couldn't do it. And I was like, ah, geez. And so then I went into the app and actually typed it out. Nothing. I was like, really? And then I remember it was a restaurant. Again, you think they would have that one pretty well locked up. And it's been around for quite a number of years, too, so it's not like it's new. And so I was like, oh, jeez. So then I went into Google Maps, found it, went, oh, yeah, that's where it's at, and then I was done. But there's been quite a few occasions where I'll start there. You know, I'll start with Siri, and it's frustrating.
Yeah. I find, yeah, you know.
But if I know the address, because oftentimes I'll get the address, copy and paste that over to Google Maps, because I actually like their turn-by-turn a little better, because it doesn't kill my battery.
Right.
And then when I put in the address, it can find it. Which, you know, so it knows that the address is there. It just doesn't have the data to tell me what it is.
And that, yeah, I think you can. I think you will eventually. They'll let Google put something on there. To be totally honest, would be my guess. I think it'll take a little while, and people will be pounding at the door for it before they allow it. But
they'll allow it if they ever allow third party apps. I don't think they would explicitly allow that.
It sounds like they are going to allow third party apps. They're going to go with extreme caution when it comes to moving forward. Number one, sounds like there's going to be a requisite for big time Siri integration, which is really interesting since it's impossible for third party apps to have it right now. But
right now,
but the big rumor mill this week was that, you know, insiders are saying, yeah, Siri is coming to third-party apps. You'll be able to, you know, do stuff with Siri and on in the third party. And the whole reason for that is
third party. Sounds weird. Siri, yeah. James says, play music.
Exactly. And the reason, there's two reasons for that. Number one, obviously CarPlay would be benefited from that, but also the iWatch is going to be
Apple TV.
And Apple TV, they've got all these interfaces that they want to move away from having your fingers doing the walking and just have you talk to it. And so they're going to open Siri up is what the rumor mill's saying right now. But the other thing is they're going to move one of their big, you know, requirements here is it's got to be safe. It's got to be safe for people to use, and it's got to be, you know, whatever. And which, you know, it's cool. I think that's the right direction to move. And
when you're hollering down the freeway in a hunk of metal that big, I would not you not messing around with your interface.
Yeah, I just can't wait for cars to drive themselves. Honestly,
bring it on, man! Already. Now I'm I was thinking about this the other day.
Yeah.
I daydream pretty regularly, I'll admit it. And I was like, you know, that one Terra Fuga, I don't remember, that one airplane car that can just kind of take off and land on its own. I'm like, I'll hold out for that one. I realize it's probably going to be like $1 million, but I'll figure it out. I'm like, if I got to become independently wealthy just for that, I'll figure it out.
Yeah,
I want
a car that drives itself, and I'll
take a flying car over a driving itself car. I think.
If I
had to choose, you
know. All things equal, yeah, me too. But
yours will probably be more affordable.
A lot sooner.
We don't know that. Know that.
Yes, you do.
No way.
Mine already exists.
It's not available to buy.
Yours doesn't even exist.
It does exist. They're in the prototype stage.
Oh, jeez.
Just like yours.
Whatever.
Like yours.
So,
oh, man.
One of the interesting things about this is that one of the things that I thought would kind of pique my interest on this whole CarPlay thing, because, you know, it's kind of a minor product release, doesn't really affect anybody, except it's a big question of, for me, you know, the engineering side of it, of how does it work, which I think is interesting, and just kind of seeing where Apple's going, seeing where this technology is going, and, you know, because that's kind of been the big question is, okay, when iOS the car comes, yeah, what does it actually do, which is, you know, the practical application of the selling point, but how does it work is, you know, is going to determine, you know, what's doing the heavy lifting, what's doing the, are all you using is basically the radio antenna on your phone, or is it doing a lot of processing, what's going on here? And what it sounds like is this. So number one, especially in the Ferrari, but in quite a few different cars, turns out CarPlay is being powered by BlackBerry's QNX operating system.
It's being powered by it? That's not
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
that's not
so
what I heard, but okay.
So basically what's going on is you've got your little your dashboard with its like monitor and stuff, and QNX is running there, and they built an interface on top of that, and that talks to the phone. And essentially the third party app developers, they said one of the things that Apple's done that's really cool is that they haven't required anybody to really build an app in order to have it work with CarPlay. Basically what happens is the control console becomes a remote control, effectively. And it's, so like for different music stuff and different things that you can touch, displays and stuff, all of that's largely being driven by the phone. There's just this thin layer of controller basically on the phone. And you know, honestly, sometimes they're talking about the fact that, yeah, QNX is kind of doing that, basically like driving the display and stuff. And one of the reasons why QNX is being used is because QNX was designed around being used on embedded systems. It's a very low power, low resource requirement operating system that does display stuff, has input, does display, does output. And it does it very efficiently, which is the reason why BlackBerry bought it and based BlackBerry 10 off of it. It's because it's a great foundation for that sort of thing. It's kind of like saying QNX powers CarPlay is kind of like saying Linux powers Mac, which is true. The Unix kernel powers the Mac, just like the Unix kernel powers Linux. And Linux powers Ubuntu. They all kind of stem off the same base technologies. And so they share a lot in common. And when you get down to the deepest levels of the operating system, they have the exact same commands by and large. And that's one of the things that's going on here is effectively. So it's not like BlackBerry powers these things at all. What's cool about it, what's really, really cool about it, is that they've basically, like, the engineers that are working on it said, the reality of it is we're using QNX because it's one of the partners that has worked with Apple, but really and truly any embedded operating system can work with this, which means so can Android. and this is where it gets really fascinating. Because,
well, and work with it is, by the way, your picture's frozen, or wait, move around. Oh, you're back. Cool. The way that I heard work with it is in the sense that if you've got an iPhone and you bring it into the car, it'll pop up CarPlay. But if you don't have an iPhone, it'll use whatever the standard system is.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, work with it is in the sense that it's like a dual boot type thing.
Exactly.
If you have the right key, it'll work. So it's not like it's built on top of it per se. It sounds like it can work beside it.
Right. Well, and that's why this is such a cool. That's why this is actually, like, you know, a lot of people were complaining about the fact, why would I buy a car that has a 10-year shelf life? You know, like generally people own cars for 10 years, for a cell phone that has a 2-year shelf life. What if I changed operating systems? Is their big complaint. And basically, what they're coming to here is that a car company, Ferrari, can relatively easily. They can take Android and whatever Android, however Google brands their Android in the car thing, they can build that interface, have it be running on whatever embedded processors they have doing its thing, and have a third interface that just connects to the radio and your, you know, Sirius and your XM stuff. And so basically, if you bring in and you plug in an Android phone, Android power phone, Android takes over the main console. If you plug in an iPhone, iOS takes over the main console. And if you've got nothing plugged in, you still got the radio. And that's the direction they're all going, which is really cool. I mean, I just sit there and I go, that's exciting because...
Makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, it's and in the car, that's awesome. But what I really like about it is it's an acknowledgement on Apple's part And the larger, you know, tech community in general, this idea that, you know, these are going to be your main brains. You know, I'm holding up a phone for you listening to it. Your phone, your main processor, that'll be your main brain. It'll have your data. It'll have your internet connection. And that's going to power other things, other screens. And so it kind of goes back to, you know, this larger ecosystem of tools and stuff that are all going to integrate together. And this is your sort of Apple is taking another step into building, you know, a specific niche product that's now it's going to integrate with this new thing that has its own life and does its own thing. We're not powering it. We're not powering it alone. It can do its own thing. It can handle everything that it wants to handle. But if you want to let us take over it and use your internet connection and your, you know, data, we can do that as your stored data. We can do that as well. And, you know, I'm hoping that they do something similar with the iWatch, where the iWatch is, you know, a really cool complete solution that works with your iPhone, but there's a protocol that they're putting in place, and I've talked about this before, but there's a protocol that they're putting in place that allows the iWatch to easily integrate with the iPhone, and they open up that communication protocol so that Samsung can come in and they can build a Tizen watch that will be able to integrate with it, and so can Android, and Apple will just have the best watch. Other people can, you know, Pebble can use that same protocol, and if they can build a decent watch, then they can use it, and if you like this particular styles of it, it's, you know, and Apple's whole thing is we just want the best customers. We want the customers who are going to pay the, you know, give us the biggest margins. We don't need everybody who has an iPhone to only have an iWatch in order to, you know, make our market, which is what they're doing here. It's not like, you know, it's not like they're saying you have to buy a Volvo if you're going to buy an iPhone. No, any, you know, we understand every, you know, we're not going to take over the car market. So if anybody wants a car solution, we're going to allow other people to play in this market. And you know, Apple can do that really, really well sometimes. And I mean, I hope they're setting a foundation that, you know, that Google plays well with. And what I really hope is that people don't get stupid. And this is something that I think the car companies are really likely to do because they're idiots sometimes, is I think they're really likely to try to, like, sign licensing deals, or they'll try to sell you a car that has one or the other. They won't try to give you all your different options so that, you know, you've got to go back to the showroom, and if you buy a new phone, you've got to buy a new radio as well, which would be exceedingly annoying if that's the route they go. But it seems like the tech companies, the guys that are actually building, or the phone companies, I should say, aren't going that direction. So, oh, pretty cool. I like it. I like what they're doing with it.
Cool. So, Oscars happened last weekend, right?
Yeah, while we were doing the show, they were announcing the...
That's right, we stopped for no one.
Yeah, exactly. Not even the Super Bowl. We'd stop for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, did we? No, we, well...
We've always gone after it. The Super Bowl, but yeah. We would stop for the Super Bowl. Outside of that, though, we've gone straight through playoff games with our favorite teams playing. We stopped for no
Boom.
One.
Boom. Dedication. Exactly. Tech never rests, neither do we. So, Oscars happened, and Samsung had a pretty big deal, I guess. They had ads running. They gave Ellen, who I guess was the host.
Yeah, she was pretty funny. I'll give her that.
Funny. That's cool. That's cool. They gave her a phone and were like, use it.
Well, they paid $20 million for some big commercial spots as a big sponsor of it. So they were like, you know, you're using a phone out on stage. You're using a Samsung Galaxy S5, baby.
Yep. And so she did. And part of what she did was she took a bunch of selfies, which I guess was her idea, not even Samsung. So there you go.
No.
And I guess she took this one. It's got a couple faces you might recognize in it. I think I recognize at least two. Oh.
You're really up on the pop culture.
Just so you know, I am. One of my favorite things to do is to say at least, and then say just some ridiculous number, and like ridiculous low. People just right. That's one of my favorite things to do.
This is technically true.
I know. Exactly. So I love doing those kind of things. That's my new shtick. And so, anyways, apparently that was the most retweeted picture or tweet of all time. What was it? 2.6 million retweets or something. Yeah. There you go. And counting to beat the former number one, which was Obama's victory tweet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, So she did that. And so there was this cool article on Pando Daily, which I feel like they changed their name to Pando, but what do I know? Maybe they did, and they just – anyways. They were just talking about, you know, did the Samsung thing pay off? And what was interesting, they said, maybe. Because the whole thing was like, did what they do make sense? And what they were really saying is that it actually had a better ROI for Twitter. Because – and even then they were like, what's the value of a retweet?
Yeah.
And one of their points was like, okay, 2.6 million retweets, that's great. But in terms of – and I don't know if I can find it fast enough. Audience capture, there were like, you know, 20 million people watched the commercials. So the commercial still had a bigger impact, but this was kind of free, kind of spontaneous, which is part of the, you know, the other hard part. And anyways, they were saying that like one of the hard parts about what they're doing is that you know, they're kind of just leaving it up to chance in a way with the content itself. They're like, it could pay off big time. It could not. You know, they run into a snafu, where it's not really a snafu per se, but like Ellen was using her iPhone backstage. Yeah. And, you know, and
she's an iPhone user primarily.
Yeah. To which it was like, hello, celebrities don't always use what they're endorsing. Shocker. You know, it's kind of like no news, other than it's kind of like, man, it's a bad time to find out, but, you know, whatever. But they were saying that, like, this was actually kind of a big, kind of, I don't know, turned out not to be because it worked out, but kind of a big deal for Twitter.
Yeah.
Because they said, like, she chose to take the picture and post it on Twitter instead of doing it on Instagram. And had she done it on Instagram, it would have been a de facto way of saying Facebook won. And as a result, it's saying, you know, Twitter's still relevant, and there are a lot of celebrities who are on it, and they're not early adopters. They're slow adopters. And so if they're still on Twitter, that means Twitter's got this big wave that it's just still going. It's still moving. Though if you look at their stats of new users, you're like, well, maybe.
I do want to interject here because, you know, it was a big deal that she used that she chose to use Twitter instead of Instagram. But a few hours later at one of the post parties, Justin Bieber took a picture of his former girlfriend, ex-girlfriend Selena Gomez, which if you don't know that, good for you. and posted it to Instagram. All of the Beliebers, Justin Bieber's fans got all super excited about it because it's like, you know, why are you posting a picture of your ex? Well, anybody who's had an ex kind of, yeah, I get it. I know why he was doing that. It's not them getting back together, trust me. It got like retweeted, it got, you know, it got just a ton of like of attention and stuff, and people were like resharing it and stuff, and actually crashed Instagram briefly, and did not get as many quote, you know, reshares as Ellen's tweet got retweeted, which It's funny. I've never heard of any Facebook service going down from overuse, getting a DDoS attack effectively. Yeah. Which is astounding that it's, that something that was really and truly a smaller social, wave than Ellen's selfie took down Instagram. So it was a good decision to go with Twitter because that would have really cramped your style. That being said, and on the other, point, you know what? She wasn't using a Galaxy S5. She was using a Galaxy Note 3. But if it weren't for the fact that she used her iPhone backstage, I think it would have been worth way less money for Samsung. Because, we pay a lot of attention to this. I'm in this weird, category of I watched a lot of the Oscars after we got before we started and after we got done. I watched video of it. I listened to news that talks about it. I also listen to news that talks about technology. And I'll tell you what, if she had not used her iPhone, I would have had no clue that she used the Samsung phone. Wouldn't even have crossed my mind. And I think from Samsung's perspective, they were paying $20 million to get a big ad on, on the TV show. And then they said, okay, Ellen, you're not allowed to use your iPhone during the show. It was the only reason why they had her taking the pictures. And with her selfies, she hashtagged them as hashtag blurry and stuff, making fun of the quality that the phone show uses. But if there weren't that controversy there, nobody would have talked about it. Nobody would have known it was an Android phone. And I think Samsung would have considered that a victory because at least they wouldn't have been talking about, her iPhone being used. They wanted no attention being taken off of their big commercial. That was what they were paying for. The very fact that, the Samsung Galaxy Note 3 got mentioned at all was a victory. And the only reason it got mentioned is because she used her iPhone backstage, which I think is interesting. And a lot of people are sitting there going, is this big faux pas of theirs to let, to have her, instantly go back to tweeting from her iPhone. But at the same time, it's I don't know. I don't think they're going to see it that way. I did read an article, and it's pretty funny, A History of Samsung's Advertising Gone Wrong, where they went through and they've got Kate Upton. She was at this, big Samsung Galaxy Note press conference thing, and, she's just being a model, whatever. And there's a picture of her with her iPhone 4 sitting right next to her. T-Mobile CEO tweeted about how awesome his new Samsung phone was, and he tweeted from his iPhone. They've got just all sorts of stuff, and where they've tried to do these try to use Facebook to try to get these viral marketing things going on. And you tell us how awesome your different phones are. Open, everybody will talk about their Samsung. People end up talking about their Facebook or their iPhones. And then obviously just some of their epically bad ads, the Galaxy Gear ad, which was, majorly criticized, this thing goes on and on and on for all their different, wow, this was just bad press for Samsung. And I do not believe that there's no such thing as bad press. There is bad press. That being said, all of their bad press tends to be the good kind of bad press, where people talked about the Galaxy Gear ad because it was so bad, and people, and it stuck in your mind, and people realized it, and, it's more Ovaltine, please. It's one of those things.
Did not make me buy Ovaltine, I'll tell you that.
I know.
Well, the exact opposite.
Well, that's because I've never even tasted Ovaltine. I don't know if it'd be good or not. I don't want to find out. I don't want to support a company that would have an advertising campaign that annoying. But
exactly.
for Ovaltine fans, it worked as like, you know, imprinting this thing into their mind. It, you know, they walk into the store, more Ovaltine, please. Oh my gosh. But, you know, for Samsung, it's, you know, there are products that, by and large, the only reason I think people know that the product exists is because of some majorly fumbled ad campaign that they went through. And I don't know. And not to mention the fact that they've just opposed it with some good marketing campaigns where, like, you know, making fun of, you know, of people waiting in line for the next iPhone, which, I personally find as an annoying commercial, but I acknowledge the fact that it was a good commercial and did what they wanted to do. And I only find it annoying because it's attacking people like me. But I don't know. I think it's, it was an interesting, to kind of see how the, you know, how it's, you know, it's worked for them better than you'd think. Their failures have worked for better for them than you might suspect that they should.
I would agree.
Right.
I would agree. There's one where I wish that, how do I want to describe it? That they just worked better in general. so Microsoft has shown some research that they're doing in the living room, and man, some of their living room stuff I wish would come true. And I understand when they say it's like legitimately hard, but they've created this new browser. They're calling it a 3D browser. I don't know why it's called 3D browser, but that's okay. It's called Surround Web, where the idea is you have your screen. And then around your television screen is information about whatever it is that you're looking at on the television. So they've got like pictures of an event or different thumbnails of TV shows going on. Again, this is like, imagine you have your television screen and then you have a wall behind your television. And so there's other images that are on the wall, not necessarily for reading per se, but, you know, there's like thumbnails of other channels that you might have pinned. Contacts who may or may not be online. So like in this example here, they've got, you're watching a race on your television, and what they've got is like the leaderboard above it.
That's so cool. You can
see, yeah. So it's, you know, adding information that typically would be on that second screen, your iPad, adding that to the actual screen itself, which is kind of neat. And then they show... So dumb. On one of them, just fake windows, and you know, like above your television, because yeah. You know, just in case you wanted to feel like you were outside or something. It projects windows on it. Then it also has a screen like on the side of the room too, so it's like, oh, another window.
Weird.
And then the one that I actually think is probably the most interesting is I 3D browser is such a wrong thing to say, but it's like an extended screen, I guess. So like they pull up a map, which again, I don't know why you'd be looking at a map on your television screen, but that's a different story. And what it has is in a lot of detail, the part that's on the screen has the map, but then it extends off the screen and they're showing this in the same amount of detail, but it could be like less detail.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you get a bigger context where you're at. And what I actually really liked is they have something called the Illumi Room, which was this exploratory concept, which I so wish were actually real, because it looks awesome in their concept video, where essentially it's like, in this particular example, you're playing a video game, and you're going through, and it's, you know, it's 1080p, high-def graphics for the part that's on the screen.
Yeah.
But then it extends off the screen, and it's just like sketch. And so, you know, it's very rudimentary, but it gives you an entire, you know, feel of the room just in a lot lower res detail. Again, you know, it's going off of plants and off of bookshelves and whatever. And, yeah. it extends to give you this surrounding. And there might be cases where all it really does too is it whatever color that was on the screen, it just extends the color. It may not even show a picture, but if it's a brown building, that part of it's brown. If it was a blue sky, then it extends a blue over there. If you fire a shot and there's a bullet that goes, you know, you might see the fire of the gun go up. And they're like, the problem with that is that it's ridiculously hard to program in.
Yeah, definitely like that. Go and watch this video, guys. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like, like I said, I watched it and went, oh, I want that. That's...
Oh, I like they showed a clip of somebody playing the Nintendo, or they're playing Mario Kart, and they were going through one of the winter maps, and it was snowing all around.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so again, it's just like, it's this immersive thing. And so I just saw that, and Microsoft revealed the browser, which I get it, it's a lot easier to do. And so that one actually stands a chance of seeing the light of day.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if I want the video game one, more interactive one, that would be so cool. But I think it's a neat. I like some of the ways that they're thinking about the living room and how do we make them more interactive. You know, the context thing, that's so classic. Who cares? Don't give me my contacts. But I could definitely see. I like the one where it's got a pin of other television shows that you might be watching, so you can flip back and forth to them. You know, the picture in picture, but it's off the screen, and so your main display isn't, impeded.
This would require me to have a cable, right?
Probably to take advantage of that, or not. I don't know. Maybe for broadcast, whatever. But then also be able to pull in other information about whatever you're seeing. And I mean, I could totally see, and they're probably thinking about this in the back of their heads, where, with television shows, you have advertisers. What if you just got like a banner ad going across the top for, you know, whatever it is that you're showing for the television show? So you've got that. You've got other stuff where it's like, so if it says subscribe to us on Facebook, oh, check it out. Here's their Facebook page. You can subscribe. They can take those action steps and
you know what I think is fascinating about this, about that, is that Apple is going in the direction of they're trying to build in more and more features that allow you to take everything off the screen.
Yeah.
Full screen apps. We want no distractions. Mm-hmm. Microsoft is going in the direction of we want more distractions. We want to give you opportunities to see more and more stuff. Which is interesting. It's funny. My personal opinion is I'm at this point in my life, I'm working on not playing games while I watch movies, not goofing off on my phone while I watch. Mm. You know, it's like I'm at this weird place where it's like I can't really fall asleep without like a TV show in the background and watching some, you know, stupid YouTube video of somebody painting. Like, I need full-on, incredible white noise. Yeah, I need my brain completely, ADD'd out. Like,
I'm weird.
Yeah, I am weird. But, but it's like, but I had taken that to the point of I couldn't even watch, I could barely sit in a theater and watch a movie because I would get bored. I mean, and granted, like, I'm a functional ADD, person, so for me, like, I do get really into that, give me more data, give me more information, give me more stuff, but at the same time, I realize that it's not necessarily healthy to be like that,
I don't know, I see what you're saying.
That being what I was about to say was, but what I like about the video game Illumiroom thing is that basically what they've done where this like side browser thing gives you a bunch of other information to distract you, that one is designed to mask all of the other things going on in your room so that all you have is the one thing that you're focusing on. It turns your entire room into the game you're playing. And which I think is an interesting, it goes the opposite direction. And that to me is more compelling. That's like you said, that's something that I want. That's exciting. That's, your Oculus Rift put a headgear on, have the audio and the visual just take over your entire everything, and, you know, focus on what you're doing. Yeah,
I would love to see where they've got, how do I want to say it? Like, I could see where this makes complete sense for, like for sports, where oftentimes you want information, you're looking stuff up, you know, give me a tweet stream of some sort. You're not looking for entertainment, it's information.
Yeah.
I could see that too with live events like the Oscars, you know, as people are tweeting pictures or making comments or something, you know. And again, it'd be cool if it were curated in the sense that, they open that up to the Oscars, and like you subscribe, you got your Oscars, but then there's also the Oscar web. What are they called? The surround web. And yeah. So it's, if someone wins, it gives you information about that person. You learn a little background context, who was the winner last year, you know, whatever. Interesting tidbits. If other celebs are tweeting about it, you could read their tweets. Oh, congratulations, you're so amazing, you know, whatever. I look at that and go, that would be really cool. Now, if I'm watching a movie, maybe what it is, it's you know, to make it actually, so it actually could happen, is it's just the background colors just change to fit the dominant scene color. And that's something I feel like it could process in real time fast enough and switch fast enough that, you know, that it could actually work. You think, like, again, in the second and third Matrix movies, they were very cognizant of when you're green, in the Matrix, yeah. It's green, and when you're in the real life, it's blue. And, right. And so, you know, the algorithm would pick up on that and, you know, just make your entire room kind of fit with that. Or you just, you know, turn it off to a static image or a picture slideshow or something. I could definitely see that. I look at that and go, that's pretty cool. And I get where, yeah, Apple's working on simplifying the interface and getting rid of that stuff. I honestly think something like that, I don't know. They're two separate directions.
Right.
I agree. I like Microsoft's direction, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I like it. Because now when I watch football games, I will go on to Twitter ahead of time, and I will find the different team tweet streams, and I'll subscribe to those, and I'll get that information. I'll look up stuff during the middle of the game, and, you know, it's a big time second screen when I watch one game a year.
I'll be totally honest. I'm sitting there watching The Dark Knight Rises, which is what I was doing before this show started, and my Xbox is watching me watch The Dark Knight Rises, and all of a sudden the character comes on. I'm like, dude, what other movie was he in? And I point to him, and it highlights him, like, live, you know, because it knows where I'm pointing. It, you know, it, his head, you know, so it has a little cursor that it's tracking. It locks on to who that person is, does some sort of an image algorithm type thing, and all of a sudden, IMDb pops up right next to it with the other list of, you know, movies that he's been in, and I can be doing that on the side. You know, and obviously, that is a, you know, there, I just listed four different technologies that have to be integrated together that all require a lot of processing power, but the idea that, you know, you could put all those pieces together eventually into one holistic, you know, I'm now interacting with the computer. The computer's listening to me, figuring out what I want, and it's processing that information in a way that it's listening to what I say. It's watching what I do. I don't have to pick up my phone anymore in order to get the information I want. That would be pretty cool. And, I don't know, and to go to football. Wait. I want to see an instant replay, you know, and
yeah.
You know, and the main broadcast continues, but on the side screen you can see or the main broadcast switches to the side view and the side screen, and then all I'm watching my own replay, like, live, you know. And if you can get away from the requisite for a actual, you know, input device, because you can talk to it, it can hear you, it can watch you, that would be pretty compelling. That would be pretty cool. I would drop more money than I'd, you know, be willing to say on a
more money
like that.
Than for a self-driving car?
No.
Just get the bounds.
That is definitely what I would be saving my pennies for first.
All right. Cool. Yeah.
But,
so I saw that. I thought it was neat. Just rekindled my imagination.
Yeah, that is very cool. I like, you know, dude, I, you know, Microsoft has got smart people there. you know, as malign as they can be, they're not, you know, they're not out of the race yet by any means. They do some cool stuff. So Tesla, it turns out,
in between each transition, it's this classic.
So now I'm self-conscious of it. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Jeez.
Yes. I love being an older brother. So Tesla.
Is in America, we've talked about this before, and so I just kind of want to fill out the rest of the story, that this is the direction that they're going. In other countries, they've been selling like crazy, largely because there are carbon taxes on cars in other countries. I think it's one of your Finland, Norway, one of those countries. Up in the north, Europe, nobody really cares about them. They have a population the size of San Francisco. It's ridiculous.
You know, it always killed me when, like, Rome Total War, it would always be snowy and gross up there. So it's like, I hate conquering up there. It's just hard.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And they're all small.
Yeah, and they are. They are incredibly small. But they care about the environment. And they,
dude,
they
I gotta play that game again. That's a great game. Right?
They care about the environment, so they have carbon taxes. So for cars are expensive. You pay a lot in taxes for combustion vehicles. And Teslas, they're the top of your line electric cars. And they don't have these carbon taxes. So although the Tesla is expensive, it is at least in parity, if not cheaper, than a lot of, just your run of the mill Toyotas. Not only are they way more affordable, though, are they like the most affordable luxury car out in that country, they're just more affordable in general. So they're selling like crazy. Juxtapose that to America, where, you know, America is freaking out because we have, you know, our legislature has been bought and paid for by special interests in many areas of the world. And so it's like there are states where they didn't even want to allow Teslas to be sold because they didn't have a showroom, and we have laws that say that if one individual wants to sell a car to another individual, that they need to have a showroom in order to do it, which is a ridiculous premise. But hey, you know, it's the law. And so Tesla's basically, they are sitting here saying Elon Musk, he's not even American, really. He's from another country, from Africa.
Yeah, that's him.
I like him so much. They're basically sitting there saying, look, we're running into all sorts of red tape in America, and people and the auto industry is trying to stop us from selling cars, trying to stop competing toe to toe because for whatever reason they don't want to. We're building this giant gigafact. I know.
They are competing, just differently than we would like to see.
Yeah, exactly. if you can't compete with the product, compete with legislation.
We call about there's such a thing as non-market and market competition. Yeah. They're just going after some non-market competition.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And I think they're going to lose in the long run because of it. Wow. Unless they decide to innovate. I get the, you know, whatever. At this point they show no signs of it. I think eventually they'll get around to it. The question is, will they do it fast enough to keep up with the real go-getters? Because there are go-getters. You know, your BMWs are starting to realize that there is a big market for, especially in Europe, for cars like this. You know, eventually Toyota's no, you know, schmuck when it comes to battery technology, and they're going to, you know, turn their sights on those markets too. If there's a market and Tesla can tap into it, everybody's going to start competing for it. And, you know, question is, can America get on board fast enough? But basically what they've said is they're going to start – Tesla's going to turn to Europe. They're going to start really pushing out in Europe. They built their east to west coast supercharge stations. You can make it from one coast to the other without having to plug into an outlet. So they feel like they've built enough of their supercharge stations. Now they're going to start building them in Europe and start selling cars there. And, you know, causing a ruckus over on across the pond.
Love it.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm excited for it. I'm glad because I think in the long run it's better for everybody. Yep. It's insanely annoying to me that.
Well, because they'll grow, they'll have the sales, they'll get momentum. It's good.
It is. It's great, and I just wish America. I just wish it's one of those things where it'd be so good for America in general, just to be pushing innovation, and it's an American company that's building all of their stuff in America, and not in my personal opinion, they're building them in my backyard, quite literally down the street from where I work. It's a great – I want Tesla to succeed and go gangbusters, not just because I hope to work for Elon Musk one day, but just because it's amazing when they do well. And you're just sitting here going, why is Detroit fighting them so incredibly hard? It's not just Detroit. I think Detroit doesn't even care as much as – I don't know. The fact that Detroit doesn't care drives me nuts. It just drives me nuts. The whole thing drives me nuts.
They got bigger problems.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's look at another example of a company who
innovating in America. So I just want to lay this out there because I'm reading all sorts of articles about this stuff, and I haven't stated what my belief is going to happen, and by my belief I mean actually tell you what's going to happen. Okay. Nobody. I have not read this anywhere. Okay. Apple has invested a tremendous amount of money into the Sapphire Crystal, phone growing or not phone, but Sapphire Crystal growing technology. They're building this giant factory.
Right.
They're doing it for two reasons. A lot of people are debating whether or not they're going to put it on the phones. They're pretty sure they're going to put it on the watches because that is the primary use of Sapphire Crystal today is for unbreakable watches. They're going to put it on the iWatch. That is going to be – that is one of the big justifications of this factory. And it will be a single piece probably of Sapphire, relatively thick piece of Sapphire that's going to go on your watch. The thing with the Sapphire is that it's basically unscratchable. But it's way more likely to shatter than some of your other glasses, like your Gorilla Glass. And so there's this belief in Corning, and the reason why the article
Surprise, they would come out against it.
I know. Corning execs basically, yeah, they're like, yeah, Sapphire is a terrible idea. Why would you do that? And their big argument is that that Sapphire shatters. You can't scratch it anymore, but you drop your phone, it's going to break. And I've never done damage to my phone before just by keeping it in my pocket. My screens have always, especially on this 5S, the screen has always suffered damage due to being dropped, and impact damage. Because if you don't know much about material science, there's these curves that kind of like of material hardness, how you measure hardness. There's hardness comes at a cost because the opposite of something that's really hard and stiff is something that's really flexible. And steel, one of the reasons why steel is used everywhere isn't because it's so incredibly rigid. Iron is actually stronger than steel. The reason why we use steel everywhere is because it's flexible. It's really strong, but it'll bow back.
Totally knew that.
Whereas iron never moves. And so if you get it to the point where it starts to flex, it shatters. Mm-hmm. Whereas iron or steel, like, it's really incredibly difficult to make steel shatter. Especially cast iron shatters really easily. So these are the opposite ends of the problem that they were dealing with. And the thing with a watch is generally it's strapped to your wrist, so you never drop it.
Sure.
Yeah, and if you
and, you just and the, knock it on stuff by accident,
which is something that it's relatively that Sapphire is relatively good at surviving against. Part of this is how hard are you hitting it, what force are you doing it, what's the momentum behind it, stuff like that. And it just in general, Sapphire is, you know, like I've said, Sapphire is used in the highest end watches. That's what the entire market is for. It's not a ridiculous premise that Apple would use it and use it primarily. So the big question that everybody asking is, well, are you going to use Sapphire on the phones? Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the answer. Okay. I'm just going to lay it out there. Sapphire crystal, you're allowed to make, you can make it incredibly thin sheets of sapphire. I mean, just like just a fraction of what the
microns of fractions. Yeah.
You can make it a fraction of what the current thickness of the glass is, which a lot of people think is a big selling point because you could have these incredibly thin sheets of glass. And what they're going to do is they're going to make a really thin sheet of glass, and they're going to use a Corning Gorilla Glass or similar, and they're going to use a laminate. And then they're going to put the two back to back, and they're going to have one piece put together. And the Corning Gorilla Glass is going to give it that backing of flexibility and strength. And that incredibly thin sheet of sapphire is going to be used for your scratch resilience. And I almost guarantee, and it's funny, I'm a little bit concerned that I may never be proven right on this because there's a chance that Apple might just not tell anybody that they're doing this and do it anyways. But they'll do it as a laminate. And in cars, you know, if you ever try to break a car window, they're really hard to break, and the reason why they're really hard to break is because they're all laminate. They shatter in specific ways. They're actually two sheets of glass stuck together with some sort of plastic composite. And
totally knew that too.
Exactly. And it's all about how these things shatter. That's how you build strong glass. You know, Corning's Gorilla Glass is awesome because it's incredibly scratch resistant. And it's very strong on it, or it's flexible on its own.
What do you think about those rumors of covering the entire? You okay over there, bud?
Give me 1 second. I might.
What do you think about those rumors of them covering the entire phone in glass so that people can finally get rid of their cases?
It's possible. Okay. I think it's possible. I think they're.
What about probable then?
I think one of the things that you're going to see, from what I can tell, what they're going to do is they're going to leave the basic size of the iPhone the same. And what they're going to do is they're going to get rid of the side bezels. And if you measure what the actual width of the phone is without the side bezels, and you extend all your dimensions out, you know, accordingly, in ratio, you end up with a 4.7-inch 16x9 screen, which is why that has weight. And they've shown test glass, you know, which, you know, rumored test glass has come off before. It's just one of those things that makes a lot of sense. So basically what everybody thinks they're going to do is they're going to take the LCD out to the very edge of the screen. And if they do that, you're going to have to do something cosmetically to cover that. So you're not going to necessarily put just glass there. It's going to be some sort of a steel barrier. To put glass on top of that would make sense. But you know what? I really need to get some water. I'm going to be right back. Sorry about this. Might need to cut it out later. I'm on the trail end of a cold here, and I realized I took some nose and cough medicine about 4 hours and 10 minutes ago. And guess how long the medicine lasts for? It's crazy.
All right. Well, I want to move on because we're running low on time here, and we spent way too much time on that topic.
Go for it.
So I'm just going to – man, I'm really bummed. I was sharing something good there. Oh, well.
Bummer.
I guess I'll cut it out later. Here we go.
Smile. No, I'm not taking your picture. I'm taking my picture. Not my face, my body. Not the outside, the inside. This got weird. Let me start over. See this iPhone case? It's more than just an iPhone case. It's a powerful health monitor.
It's a powerful health monitor. Oh, come on. Internet, you're killing me.
Oh. It's a great little video. It's worth watching.
It is.
It's pretty cute.
I'm just struggling right now, aren't I? Yeah. To get my computer to work.
Smile.
Yep, that's great.
All that RAM, what was it worth?
Nothing.
This got weird. Let me start over.
All right, here we
go. See this iPhone case? It's more than just an iPhone case. It's a powerful health monitoring device. These are the sensors where my fingers go.
It's got two
here,
in the back,
and I wait a
few
seconds.
Top.
Now I have a snapshot of my health that looks like this.
Sure.
The readout of my vitals. The kind of stuff you've always needed really expensive machines for. I can now get it any time you want. You can measure your heart rate, your blood pressure, your blood oxygen level, your respiration. Your heart rate variability, which tells you your stress level. There's even an ECG. That's a fancy way of saying it measures the electrical activity in your heart. Even your temperature. Coming down with a fever, you'll be the first to know. And it does all this with medical-grade accuracy. It connects automatically to your phone with Bluetooth LE,
of course,
sending the data from your sensors to the app, so all your vitals are captured, measured, and logged. And the battery lasts 2 months on a single charge.
It's a long time.
It is a long
time. Keeps on going. Just like you. Use it for your whole family if you want. You can capture data for multiple users and track them all separately in the app. It measures more than just your heart and your temperature. It even measures your lung functions with the included spirometer attached.
That's crazy.
Just like what doctors use. But way
more
affordable.
Use it as a breathalyzer.
Yeah, I get it.
The spirometer tells you your lung capacity and airflow. Important stuff. Already wear a device that tracks your physical activity.
Like you.
It'll sync with the app, so you have all your data in one place. The more you know about your body, the better you can be at taking care of it. So smile. This is Wella.
Smile. So what do you think?
I want one so bad I can't stand it.
Oh, I bet, because you already have the Fitbit, which he says would integrate with it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the Fitbit or the Up that he was wearing.
Well, they're very vague about it, and I think they do that on purpose because I'll bet it integrates with the Up, the Fitbit, and the Nike Feelband and the Samsung, Flex one that comes around, and I bet they're trying to integrate with everything. Everything with an API.
$200! Oh, my gosh.
That's why I don't have one, but I want one. It's cool, man. It drives me crazy that I'm not as good of an engineer as I'd like to be with this sort of thing, because I've wanted this for like months or like a year. I wanted this a year ago. I knew that this was coming, and it's like, and all you have to do is do a little bit of research into how do you calculate calorie burn, and it becomes incredibly obvious that this is the direction we're going, because steps is a decent approximation for how many calories you've burned. Heart rate is a pretty good one. Actual breath analysis is the way we you do it for like medical grade testing. For super accurate stuff, which means it's coming next. That was a little bit further off, though. It's because it's rather invasive. Whereas this, I don't know, it's really cool. For me, the problem that I have...
It's Fitbit for starters on devices.
Nice. one of the things that I take pause on is that it's an app I have to turn on, and then I have to test it. It's not continuous monitoring, which is what I like about the Fitbit. It's continuous background monitoring. And it's, it's one of the reasons why I want, Samsung's, Galaxy Gear
Watch, yeah.
Whatever, that their version of it, because it's a continuous monitoring, and it does heartbeat monitoring. That's what I want. And I look at, and the iWatch, if it doesn't have a heartbeat monitor, which it will, there's absolutely no reason for me to get it. I won't even consider it. To me, that's the next step. That's what I want. What's cool about this is it's got everything else. It's got, it's got your, like they say, the EKG, different heart information, your sweat analysis, your lung breathing, I don't know, which is all cool. I mean, it's got a lot of cool stuff. And if I had $200 just lying around not doing anything, I can tell you what, man, I'd buy one today. Or whenever it goes on sale. But I don't know, it's the future of health tech. It's awesome. It's very cool. I think in the long run, it's not going to sell as well as they want it to because it's not continuous quantifying of your information. But it's cool.
It's one of those
where
that product would have been really good 2 years ago.
Yep. It would have been amazing 2 years ago.
It would have gotten into the Apple store. It would have sold like hotcakes. People would have loved it. But now with the watches coming out, it's kind of like, sorry guys, you're a little late to the game. You really are. Because now people like you're going to hold off. You're like, well, I want to see what the iWatch does first.
Right, exactly.
But still cool. And
very cool.
Really good video.
I know, yeah, it's a great
just well
video.
Done. Just well done.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Okay, so final two, I guess. So,
I counted three, but okay.
What?
It's fun.
Well, the last two are one.
Oh, okay.
That's why they got the offset. Bomber's bridge too far. So, do you hear why Bomber got fired?
Yeah, I did. Because he tried to acquire BlackBerry.
No. What?
Oh man, Freudian slip. Whatever, it's a dead company. Nokia.
Yeah. Basically, what happened was when he walked into the board and had one of his little tantrums. They say.
Should I say it's normal for him?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he's done it in public. But he flipped out and basically was like, "Look, you know, either let me buy Nokia or what's the point of me being CEO?" And the board said, "That's a good question." after letting him buy.
Well,
Nokia.
It wasn't even just the buying Nokia. It was, are we sticking with software only, or are we going to get, you know, big time into the hardware?
Yeah.
And everyone on the board was like, we think we should double down on software. And he was like, no, we should get in the hardware. And so they were like, and in the end, it was the worst of all situations where the board ended up buying hardware. Ballmer lost his dream job and the ability to see what, you know, he had started, finish. And then Nadella has to clean it all up.
Right.
Like, it's the worst of all outcomes. Yeah, it was just interesting to learn a little about the inner workings, and I guess he's a screamer. Yeah. I would struggle to work for and with a screamer, just for the record. That just doesn't sound like fun. I don't know how someone like that actually gets ever gets in charge. I don't get it.
He's a sociopath, which most high-powered CEOs are. I mean, that's like... That's demonstrably true.
That means about me.
I know, right?
I don't have to.
Yeah.
I like where I'm at.
Yeah. You know what? And you want to know what, James? That's how you know you're not a sociopath. But that's actually
comforting.
I know. It's actually been really interesting in the last like 6 months. There's been a lot of research being published. These long-term studies, widespread studies about what, you know, we know a lot about sociopathy, but it's, you know, the bigger question of how does that fit into society? And it's sort of like, you know, Asperger's and autism in general. You know, we think of this as a disease, but there's, you know, as we understand more about it and people talk more about it, there's a question of, well, maybe there's a purpose for it. Maybe it helps society in some way. Maybe it's not just a disease that leads you to murder people, not in the case of autism. But definitely, you know, obviously some of our greatest leaders, most of our greatest leaders in industry and government are sociopaths. So it's got some sort of value.
yeah, really.
But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and like you said, it's definitely fascinating. As you try to put together what was going on, what is the overall strategy at Microsoft? What does this mean for the future? Where are they going? And you see, you know, an article like this comes out, and you're like, oh, there isn't a holistic strategy because, you know, there's different teams and some are winning, some are losing. And like you said, the worst possible thing happened.
Well, it's weird. I mean, I get where Microsoft was coming from, where it was like Nokia is their one and only partner, essentially, and they were starting to flirt around with Android and drop some big hints that, we may not be totally committed to the Windows Phone era. Mm. And they're like, dude, if we're going to lose, we'll be done. And they're like, if we want to stay in this game, we got to buy our way in. And, you know, so I get that. I also get the board where they're like, dude, that's not our core strength. Why are we going to buy this? And when we're not good at it, we know nothing about it, essentially doing what Google did, except we don't need the patents because we've, you know, we've got enough. And, you know, I just sit there and it's like, that's tough. That's a tough, they're in a very, very tough spot. And I don't know what the obvious answer is for Nadella to do. You know, clearly the acquisition is going through, but I could also see in 5 years where they've shipped it off or something. What they really need is some other companies to pick up their operating system. I don't know if that's going to happen, man. I just they keep getting further and further behind the curve, and
I don't know either. I mean
they got enough money. They could pull it around. They could. Do something to, you know, invest heavily in it, do some other bets, tie it in well with other stuff. You know, I could see it, but I mean, we're talking like 10 years from now. You're like, yeah, okay, it wasn't a complete failure.
Right.
I mean, that's the best outcome they could ask for.
Right. I agree.
Unless they come up with a Lumi phone or something. That would be cool, actually. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Always interesting, though. Backstory.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then the last piece of news, and this is, I left this, this is my dessert for the podcast. Windows Phone, speaking of Nokia, has finally surpassed BlackBerry in the U.S. market share number. So
BlackBerry is doing terribly.
You know, it's just,
you are above 0%.
News. Yay! And what's really funny about this is that it's like there's a big there's a big tiff a week or two back with T-Mobile. They had this ad campaign where they basically said, "Don't like your BlackBerry? Get rid of it. Get an iPhone." And BlackBerry freaked out and they like hated and they got all angry about it. And the T-Mobile CEO was like, "Sorry about that. BlackBerry customers are great. We didn't mean to. Like, if you want to just upgrade your BlackBerry phone to a better BlackBerry phone, you could do that too." They like changed the promotion to make it BlackBerry friendly, and nobody took advantage of it. They all got rid of their Black phones and Blackberries and iPhones. I love it. I love watching this company just collapse under their.
I know you do.
I know, and it's because they get their comeuppance. That's what happens when you stop innovating and you take you rest on your laurels. You lose. You're supposed to lose. That's what drives me nuts about what's going on with the automakers in America, right? Automobile makers in America right now with Tesla. You're supposed to lose if you don't innovate and you don't come up with the best technology. You're not supposed to be able to support, you know, to protect your position because they're not selling it out of the right store. You know, BlackBerry's losing because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And I feel bad for the people that are losing their jobs. I really do. You know, unless you're not doing it well because you're not innovating. But if all you are is just like a worker, you know, working in the factories, trying to make a living, like, you know, send your kids to college, I feel bad for you. I really do. But at the same time, it's better for everybody. And long term, you know, it doesn't feel this way, but long term, it's better for you too. because, you know, you're not supposed to win if you know, if you're lazy.
Oh, man. You're brutal sometimes.
It's the end of the show, so I just pull out all the stops.
I like it, man.
Me too.
It's a slow but certain death. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. No.
Cool, man. Cool. Hey, good show.
Yeah, you too.
There was a lot that happened. We didn't even touch on Facebook buying Titan,
which
I feel like was newsworthy, but that happens. That's all right. It's all good.
I have a feeling we'll get another chance to talk about it.
Yeah, when they actually do it.
Yeah,
and talk about it.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, cool. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you. I'm like, what am I doing? Something. I don't know what. Okay, thank you, everybody, for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Thank you.